Welcome to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. This is a podcast all about human behaviour, weaving together fascinating research opinions and real-life experiences. I'll give you a psychologist's insight into how we behave in spaces we live and work in, and how they in turn shape us. This season, we're exploring my favourite topic, imposter phenomenon. So get comfy and let's dive into today's episode.
AO Abbas is an award-winning built environment marketing consultant and was named as overall winner for the Digital Woman of the Year Awards 2022. AO founded her own consultancy business, Abbas Marketing, offering marketing strategy and content creation services for architects and engineers. Her clients have included five of the top 10 UK engineering firms, as well as several SMEs and startup tech firms targeting corporates. Welcome to the Psychologically Speaking podcast, AO. It's great to have you here.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm great. I think it's useful to let the audience know that we first met, didn't we, at a networking event.
Yes, we did. We did. And because it was one of those networking events which was doing it for the kids, wasn't it?
It was.
And it was like, because whenever I go to people and go, they go, what do you do? And go, I'm a marketing consultant, but I only work with architects and engineers. And people like go, oh, because like, A, they don't know it exists. And then like, they were like, there's someone else who does that here. And I, so I had to go and find you and you were just about to leave. Because it's not often in those scenarios, yeah. You're kind of normally one of, you're the only one. So like, yeah. You hear someone who is, you're like, I must find her. So then like, I was spending ages going around trying to find you. Yeah.
For context, I think I'd just wrapped up my last piece of consultancy work with, I was working for one of the bigger engineering consultancies, wasn't I?
Yeah.
And I was wrapping up work with Network Rail. And I'd been looking, when people's eyes glaze over when I talked about it, but it was really exciting stuff. Like we were working out how much gritty lubricant to put onto the railway line. You know. And this is.
That is brilliant. Like, I'm a CV, gritty lubricant, and then you see what you come up with on searches.
And there I am in a room full of people who are niching into a specific kind of they're marketing professionals, they're social media,
we were like, we really do that.
we were like in this engineering world, which is kind of weird. But yeah, so I mean, it was really interesting to meet you because you really put me at ease, and it was just such a lovely thing. And also, we met just before lockdown because this was February, yes. Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then literally 30 days later, or within 30 days, we'd gone into lockdown.
So that was the first month of my business. So that was it. I'd literally set up that month. So yeah. That's all new.
I think I was about 5 or 6 months ahead of you because I'd been working with a council as well. Yeah. I was doing some transformation work with them. But I definitely got this idea that I wanted to, grow my consultancy and that's all changed. I've decided to become a psychologist. Why not?
That's fine.
But we both were on this journey at a very similar time and you were such a good ally for me because, you know, we were both in different spaces but knew each other's worlds a little bit. So that was lovely. I just think it's useful to kind of set that context because, we have a laugh, don't we?
Always. But that's the most important thing as well. And I think especially in like what are kind of traditional or quite academic fields and stuff, It's like you want people who are normal and laugh and kind of go, actually gritty lubricants, that is actually very funny, you know, which it is. Even for me, I'm like, oh my gosh.
It was one of the most interesting projects I ever worked on, you know. It's all about the wrong type of leaf falling on the railway line.
That is a huge issue for many people when that comes up on the line. And it's just like, actually, I know exactly what we like, we'll solve this. And people will be like, what? But like, and it is. And I think that kind of stuff, like finding like something interesting, something that's highly, highly specialist and technical that's a skill in itself, right? And I always think being able to do that and communicate that in a way that people engages people is a skill. So yeah,
and I think that's something we have in common, because I mean, people will often say to me, you know I am a real generalist in life, and I have niched into psychology. That's the only way I'm going to niche into a very broad discipline. But we both spend a lot of our time communicating ideas to broader audiences and just like kind of trying to simplify things or just make it really relevant.
Yeah, and it's making it relevant. Yeah, and I think it's often taking really technical or quite tough stuff. It's like, how do we make that so it resonates with not necessarily ordinary people, but it's just understandable? Because if people can't understand you, you can't communicate and you can't get your message across. And that's the thing. And it's quite funny when you speak to technical people, because quite often they're like, are you dumbing us down or don't you stop? And you're like, well, no, I'm actually making you understandable so that when you talk to people, they don't glaze over. It's quite important, and then you can sell to them or do what you need.
And that's so true. And we were talking before we started the recording about how we've both have this perception that we have a smaller vocab than maybe some of the technical people we work with and some of the specialists or academics we work with. And I'm quite proud of it. You know, I'm quite proud of where I come from the town and village I'm from. And I was mentioning that when I listen back to myself, I use the word interesting a lot. And in my mind, interesting means 50,000 wonderful words. But one will do.
Exactly.
I use that interesting word a lot.
Which I think is great. So yeah, definitely. But yeah, that is us really, isn't it?
It is. So this isn't the first time you've joined me for a chat in the online space. A few years ago, I did an Instagram live series, and I don't know if you remember, it was, I was asking the question, tell me about the best decision you've ever made. And the best decision you talked about was really your decision to quit a workspace that didn't align with your values. And we're going back a number of years here. And we really kind of brought this back down to the fact there was a real dissonance between you and that organisation and how comfortable you feel. And so given the whole imposter phenomenon research that I've done and how we've looked at, you know, where we fit in online communities and online spaces, I was just interested, you know, how your role now in your business, because fits into that kind of values for you, because you are, so to me at least, you're so visible on LinkedIn. You've got your own podcast, you're out there working, and I see you in online spaces. How's that showing up for you now?
Do you know what, I feel a lot more comfortable. So I feel a lot more that I can be me. And I guess in some ways when I'm thinking about it, it's like I actually do most of my stuff from here. So it's my home. It's like, you know, it's the third bedroom in my house kind of thing, which is my office. But do you know what I mean? So it's a comfortable space. I'm in a comfortable environment. And actually, I find online a lot easier probably than in person.
Oh, right. Okay.
I actually do, because I find in person quite knackering, as I've realised over the years. That if I am out a lot, then it's like the next day I feel absolutely shattered and stuff. And I think it's just knowing, I guess, where your energy is best spent. And for me, quite often it's that realisation that actually I feel a lot more comfortable online. And actually I've shifted my messaging slightly to be like digitally led marketing, because I'm like, if you're an architecture firm or an engineering firm and you're like, oh, we want to go to the best events, the best parties, I'm probably not going to worry. Why? Because I don't really go out that much. But do you know what I mean? Whereas there are marketing consultants who do, or comms consultants who know every party and networked up. But actually, if you want someone who's going to kind of get your website to work, get your SEO to work, understand, you know, like, so that's the kind of shift. And it's like, actually, if that's the stuff you're after, these are the people we want to go after. How do we reach them best? And actually, that could be a mix of online and in person. Then I'm probably that person for you. But if, you know, you're like, I just want to go out and go to parties, I'm probably not the person, because I don't go that much. So
I love that you've kind of recognised the whole energy thing, because we don't talk about energy a lot. And in imposter phenomenon, in the interviews I did with participants, the really interesting thing was that the use of energetic words to describe the exhausting feelings we experience. So one of the participants says whoosh, you know, and all of these words sound energetic, like a waterfall of emotions. And
oh wow.
I've got another episode where I'm talking to somebody about the menopause and how we think there's an potentially there's an intersection there around the way we experience imposter. But that energy thing is so important to us as individuals, because that sustainability of promotion when you are your own brand, which you are a little bit, then that's just another level of exhaustion around how we put ourselves out there.
Yeah, and I choose to put myself out there in an online capacity because I don't want to do as much face to face. And that's to do with my life, my energy.
Yeah.
But also, I guess it started in lockdown when we couldn't go out. So it had to go online. And actually, I found that worked better for me.
Yeah.
So even though, I mean, now a lot of people are obviously going out a lot more. So I am trying to get, you know, out a bit more.
Uh-huh.
But it's never going to be to the extent of someone who's going to free events a night and stuff. I'm not that person. And I think it's just having that recognition of what works for you and how you can serve people better. Because if you try and fight it too much, just think it doesn't do you any good.
No.
And it takes you to somewhere else that you don't want to be. And I think you've got to be careful of that, haven't you?
There's really interesting research emerging, because we have this in the psychological well-being sector, we have this idea of a sense of community.
Yeah.
And what we do is we see sense of community coming together to give us psychological benefits in times of crisis. And it strikes me, the earliest incarnation of your podcast, which is actually called Marketing in Times of Crisis, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And that was as a result of the pandemic. What you created there, you created like an online space, a sense of community, for people to come together and think about marketing within that zone. So we're taking this idea of a psychological sense of community and thinking about what that means for a sense of virtual community. And the interesting thing that is coming through on that research is that you don't have to be entirely online, and actually you don't have to be entirely offline, but where it really makes the magic happens is where a sense of virtual community has opportunities for face-to-face.
Yeah.
So where it's just dropping the odd thing in. And I think about doing it for the kids, and that is a perfect example for me, because we've both benefited from going to their meetups, that Frankie's organised. And it's not every week. I've not got to commit to anything.
No, and we take that offline. We take that then online, don't we? And that's the thing is that, and I think, and it's actually, I've got like a whole kind of model coming out in like digital marketing that I'm going to be doing this year with some companies. And it's all around the getting the best of online and offline.
Mm.
And it's that whole digitally led, because it's like you use your digital to kind of boost what happens when you are in person. So fast tracks it, because sometimes when I do go out to industry events, I get people coming up to me going, "Hi, Io," who I've never met before. And it's because they see my stuff online, or they come up and say they love my stuff. Yeah. I love your newsletter. I know your voice. Like loads of different types of things. But it means I don't walk into a room as a stranger. I walk in, I'm already connected to people, even if I don't know their name.
And that makes loads of sense. So in the imposter phenomenon context, we've said that the reason that we experience imposter phenomenon is because we, in online spaces, we have this concept of imagined audiences.
Yeah.
And it's not just an online thing. So if you think about those nerves that we might feel, that apprehension around going to a face-to-face networking event, it's from some similar things. We're imagining who might be there, how we're going to behave, you know.
What will I say?
I know. Yeah. Are we an individual who masks? You know, do we have to... Do we feel that we have to mask? Is masking something we have to do for our own, regulation, that kind of thing? So these ideas, you know, I always say cyber psychology isn't a separate psychology. The way we behave online is an extension of our real life and how we behave in the real world. So it's really interesting that you're totally in that space. I think what I've noticed about your messaging recently is just how you've made the most of expertise in the area to delve into those areas such as artificial intelligence and, you know, content creation and how you know, how we can make use of things like that. So is that going to be part of, I suppose, your positioning moving forward as well?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm always interested in innovation and new. So, and I like learning from outside our sector. So I will listen to podcasts from, you know, social media stuff outside, you know, from the US yeah. and things. So for me, that keeps me interested. And also I do work for prop tech and contech firms, a construction technology mm-hmm. firm. So they're the ones who are pushing these tools, because yeah. What I find interesting is that, like, one of the fastest growing investment sectors for VCs is actually construction mm. because we're so traditional and we're ripe for, you know, digitization.
Yeah,
so
automation.
I think that whole area is fascinating for that reason. Mm. And there's some really cool tools coming out. And yeah, so it's also a work opportunity. So I think keeping up to date with the latest things that are coming out in the kind of industry and how we should be changing, it interests me, which is why I think that's interesting. And content creation, I guess I like producing podcasts and content and telling stories. So yeah. that kind of fits well with my kind of skills in that and on that side. So yeah, there are definitely things I want to do. And then speaking and training as well, because I enjoy that. I like talking.
I think you're amazing. I mean, I love your podcast anyway, but I just think the way, like you said, around the storytelling there, and that's the bit, isn't it? The yeah. way you weave the stories of your guests, and the way that your behavior online is around you take us on a journey with things, and I love that about you.
Yeah, thank you. That's very kind. Like, sometimes it's weird though, because like you're like, I put this stuff out there. Is anyone actually like?
So that's a good question then, because I mean, that's speaking to those kind of imagined yeah. audiences. I've just written a blog this week, actually, which I'm posing the question, you know, do we expect too much from digital footprints? So this is that idea that we put stuff out there. And if you think about, I was comparing this to the old world newspaper model. I used to work in a news agency as a teenager.
Nice.
And so you had a sale or return model. So you knew locally what people were reading, whether reading at the time News of the World, The Guardian, or yeah. whatever. Where I worked, nobody was reading The Guardian, I can tell you. It was called
The Sun.
Yeah, The Sun, News of yep. the World, that kind of stuff. You know, some of our biggest selling kind of glossy magazines were like the PC magazines at the time, you know, yeah. Smash Hits, that kind of stuff. But we knew the readership more personally, because that person was literally footfall through a door. We could see them. We could make yeah. impressions about them. So you could grab a bit of information, but quite covertly. And, you know, it wasn't strategic, you know?
No.
So this that kind of like tacit knowledge you'd have as a shop owner. Now you put information out. And I always think about this as my mailing list, because I know my mailing list lets me know how many people have opened my emails, which I like to know.
Yeah.
I don't want to be spamming people. So like if they're not opening it, you know, take them off the list. That's fine by me. The next thing is it can give you more information about, you know, how often they're opening that one email, or how many clicks they do.
Yeah.
Do you know, I feel a little bit nervous sometimes. So I'm thinking, oh, do they know that I'm looking at that? Or do I feel comfortable, you know, with that surveillance type of culture? And then when we think about places like Substack and blogs, they're giving more and more tools to tell us where referrals of readers are coming from, etc. Yeah. And I'm just posing this question, I suppose, you know, do we expect too much from digital footprints, or is this just the start?
But I mean, there's a lot coming in on privacy, though.
Yeah.
As a counterbalance to that. So if you're on like Apple and the iOS, you can opt out of stuff and say, I don't want to be tracked. Yeah. So actually, I think a lot of the read rates and delivery rates have actually gone down for that reason, because people have opted out, and you do have that, you know, and also cookies are going out this year, aren't they? They're going to be phased out. So I think there is that. And I think people are getting more aware of the fact that you're being tracked, and that, you know, when you do stuff online and all of a sudden you're seeing all the ads. So I think people are getting more aware. Do we expect too much from a digital footprint? I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends if you're the user or if you're the business, right?
Yeah.
When I operate as a business, the footprint helps me do what yeah. I need to do and target the right people.
Strategic advantage.
It does. You know, if you can sit there and go, that's the customer journey. I can see they open that email. They keep looking at my services, which you can do. You know, I can see, you know, I can see the IP address that's come onto my website. actually I might contact them, or what, you know what I mean? So you can see that.
And perhaps there's an expectation from, you know, businesses and consumers that we've done that research and that we are evolving and developing our services based on their preferences, you know. So as a nation, perhaps we've got quite used to being surveilled as a way of us having not having to give as much tacit, you know, like straightforward feedback.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, sometimes it does make it easier. You know, like when you go into a site and it knows roughly what you're interested in, it does make it easier. Because then you're not having to go back to the start again and go, actually, which dress did I like? Or, you know what I mean? So sometimes when you're going to John Lewis and you pick a few things and then you come back later and realise, oh, damn, I didn't save them. And you know what I mean? So like having them follow you online can help. Cause you're like, I do want that. So I don't know. It's one of those, isn't it? Is it a good or a bad thing, your digital footprint? From a business perspective, I think you kind of want to know what people are doing because it does help you. But from a user perspective, do you like being watched?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird one.
So how are you, I suppose, how do you work around that as a marketer? I mean, you're doing the business to business stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean...
So
some stuff, for example, for my own stuff, I probably just... You know, like if I do lives and stuff, like, oh, we look down, you know, on some of the metrics, which won't tell me precisely who's there, but, you know, will tell me the type of seniority, their level, their location, just to know that it's the right ballpark of people that I need. And then I just try not to get too hung up on stuff. So I do look at my metrics. I'm not lying on that. But I will set myself like targets for the whole year. Like I want to be connected to this many people. I want to do this many views, you know, and do stuff like that. But I try not to get too hung up on it because sometimes you can get a bit like, oh, no, only 100 people have seen this. It's like, actually, 100 people is actually quite good when you think about it in the real world.
Huge.
You know what I mean? But then you're like, but then that post I did the other day had 6,500 people. It's weird, right? And it's just like, you shouldn't, 100 is actually quite good. But when you're like, oh, but I can get way more, it's weird. I find the whole metrics thing.
I think the whole positioning of data, I mean, I come back from a data background. So, and I know that I need to be critical of data that's put in front of me and kind of think about where the context is. And I always think, you know, from a psychological perspective, if we apply an empathy layer here, we know that people understand people, right?
Yeah.
And we know that people understand people together better. So perspective is always best to add into that empathy view. So I could say, oh, yes, there's my data shows that 10 people have opened my blog this week. But then if I go and have a conversation with somebody who's opened my blog, I will get some richer information around what they took from it versus, you know, just a point of data, for example.
Yeah.
And then if I go and speak to other people who've put blogs out this week and say to them, oh, you know, what's been happening, I'll get an even different perspective of, you know, where the context is. Everyone's going, oh, yeah, so we're like the third or fourth week in the year and everyone's, you know, up against it, or you know, it's payday and everyone's out and nobody's online, or you know, so there's so many different layers. I mean, they're just made up examples, but there's so many different layers behind data, and that's where I suppose our scientific backgrounds would say you got to look beyond that, haven't you?
And that's where the whole qualitative does come in, because sometimes when you go out and you talk to people and they're like, oh, I really love your podcast, and you might not be aware that they're listening to it or how they found it. And you know, sometimes people just share it. I mean, it's quite interesting when you get at the end of the year, as you'll find out, you'll get like Spotify Unwrapped for podcasters. But like, not everyone, I mean, Spotify's probably the second outlet after Apple Podcasts.
I didn't realise that was a thing. So I've got to wait for that for the end of the year, have I?
Yeah, but if you got a Spotify account, because then you can go and claim your podcast, by the way.
That's been done for me by Decibel Creative, who my
So once you've done that, then you can go in and it's got its own metrics as well. So that's a whole thing. But they do like an Unwrapped, like, you know, they do Unwrapped. They do it for podcasts. But then some of their metrics are a bit different. So it's like they show you things like the amount of times your podcast has been shared with other people. So like on WhatsApp and stuff like that. And it's like, that's a different metric than you normally see. That is, because there are people that go, oh, you'll like this and we'll give it to somebody else. Yeah. Like, that's quite cool. So yeah, and you don't always see that. And that will be happening for all your content on LinkedIn and all this other stuff. So I think people talk about like the dark web, you know, the kind of dark side of social kind of thing. And actually, it's that thing of people sharing it in those kind of more kind of ways that you can't track.
That's the very socialness of us. And this is what, you know, my cyber psychology perspective is very much around, we are inherently social people.
Yeah.
So we take that behaviour online. And because we take that behaviour online, the good and less good things about us go online with us. And sometimes they're amplified. And, you know, we have online disinhibitions. We know that people are more likely to take risks when they feel anonymous.
Yeah.
We know that people behave slightly different in some online spaces as well. So, but they're not things that are so opposite to the way we would behave in real life. There's an element in there that is intrinsically yours. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I wondered if I could ask you, if it's not too personal, really. Do you experience imposter phenomenon yourself?
I don't think I do. And I think one of the reasons I probably don't, I guess it's the environment I grew up with. I grew up with two elder brothers and all their friends. So I've kind of always just been like, I'm here to compete. Do you know what I mean?
I love that.
But it's true. It's like, you know, I just, you know, and I'll never forget once I was saying, when I lived in Peckham, so probably like 20 years ago, right? I just remember like going to the gym and like, I'm ridiculously competitive against men because of my brothers, right? Mm. So I just remember being in the gym and like, I was doing some like exercise class. I ran into a wall to try and beat this guy. And like, I actually did it just like, because I wanted to win.
Were you okay?
I was all right, but like, you know what I mean? When you afterwards, I was like, why did I do that? And it was just literally, my brain was just like, I need to win this.
I mean, that is a metaphor for a bruised ego, if I've ever heard one.
Well, then that, you know, when you think about it afterwards, you're like, oh. Okay. But yeah, so, yeah, in terms of that, I don't tend to have imposter syndrome, really, or phenomenon. I think it's more a case of, yeah, at times I might kind of question myself and like be like, is this the best thing? And that's generally if I'm tired, I'm not feeling that great. And But really, I'm like, no, I should be here. I'm pretty kind of confident. My mum always encouraged me that I can do whatever I want, kind of, you know, if I put my mind to it, kind of thing. So I've always had that. And then obviously the competitive thing against, I was the youngest only girl, kind of, you know. So I was just.
I'm so pleased that you've talked about competition, because that's something that I'm trying to pick up as a theme here. So one of the outcomes of the imposter phenomenon research was that women see these online spaces in two ways. One, as a community where, yeah, we're all there to support each other, and that's really, really good. And there was some of that conversation. Yeah. And you can see where sometimes that viewpoint's very strong in terms of, I will support other women, I will hold them up, blah, 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 blah. And there's a reason why we do that, and I'll come back to that in a minute. But the other side of that is that I'm here, and I'm here to be competitive, and those women are my competition as well.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be a dick. But I am also going to look after my own self-interest, because I'm here to promote myself and I'm confident to do that. The really interesting thing is that when we look at self-promotion behaviour from a psychological perspective, women who self-promote, who were pitched against men who self-promote, are often seen as defying a social norm. So they're judged harshly about that. And then what tends to happen is women on women judge women who self-promote in a more harsher way as well.
Yeah, we do.
So we just perpetuate
the
situation.
Yeah.
And then what I was intrigued around, and this is, so I've, for my PhD research, I'm looking at networking more generally, and I'm quite interested in mindset, because there are spaces that perpetuate that, oh, let's all be really nice to each other. And I do worry that perhaps that's just a little bit too nice, because let's not forget we are here to make money.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I mean, one of the talks I do is around just like B2B, because I just think a lot of women are just like, oh, I only want to sell to other women. I only want to do this. It's like, you're not going to make any money. But you know what I mean? But it's like actually going towards some of the technical stuff that we've worked on and things like that. It's proper salary. You know, it's like these are proper businesses, B2B. And I just think I've always been in B2B marketing. And I just think people are like, oh, no, it needs to be this soft area. And it's like, no, I mean, like, think of that market. There's less competition. You know, you can go, you know, you can earn better rates. You can do stuff like that. And I just think women aren't always thinking like that. And yeah, I mean, I love female spaces. And it's interesting, there's more and more communications consultants and marketing consultants coming into the field for like built environment and B2B. It's great. They're leaving practice and they're like, actually, we want to set up on our own.
Yeah.
And we're actually really, there's a lovely network of female communicators and we're all supporting each other. But what's interesting is that we see it as being, so if we know someone's like thinking of, you know, leaving a practice and setting up on their own, we support them.
Yeah.
We don't sit there and go, ooh, no, no, your competition. No, because and my approach and their approach is actually the more of us doing this, the more we can create the market for this. And I think that's the thing, especially in traditional industries where they used to just go, we've got to hire someone in-house or we've got to go to these one of these top 10 big agencies who charge you 10K or whatever for someone who's junior. 10K a month. But like, so for us, I'm like, actually, there's more people doing this, seeing it, talking about the model, you know, talking about consultants, all of that kind of stuff, freelancers. It's good for us all. And I think that's the thing is like, that kind of thing is really useful. But ultimately, I mean, it's interesting because some of the kind of male comms consultants aren't necessarily as friendly and they're not as welcoming, put it that way.
You know, I think we've all experienced things like that.
Yeah. And it's quite pronounced and you're like,
There's two things there I'm going to pick up on. I mean, the first one is the more women who are putting themselves into what were traditionally male spaces, it starts to break down those norms I talked about in terms of women not self-promoting in those types of spaces. And I know that there's a huge kind of network around women in rail, for example, and women in engineering.
Yeah.
And there are lots of things that are there to try and break down some of the intersections of inequity, if you like. But unless we are being that change ourselves and we are really talking the way we want to talk rather than masking it and going, oh, yes, no, I definitely support you and I'm going to aim low, nothing will ever change either. In terms of perception, I mean, I do wonder as well, there's a very interesting thing that happens to women in corporate where they are not always getting the same opportunities as their male counterparts. And then you look at things like the campaigns from Pregnant and Screwed, and we know that they're exiting corporate, you know, either around childcare issues or at menopause. You know, there's two kind of bumps in our life as women that are more likely to force us out of that corporate space. So sometimes when we've had bad experiences, that can also really change the direction of who we want to work with and how we want to work. So I don't blame people for saying, I don't want to work with corporates. I don't want to go down that route. I want to exit out and I want to get out of that because it left me with a bad feeling.
Yeah.
And actually, some of that imposter phenomenon experience is exacerbated by you know, essentially spaces that are not psychologically safe. And I've already spoken to Work Culturati about that in the podcast series. So that psychological safety being absent in a physical corporate workspace has such a challenge to us if we are setting up our own businesses. But it also says a lot, doesn't it? So I can understand why these things happen, but it doesn't mean that we have to accept it, I think.
No, and I think you can find there are different businesses that you can be targeting that are more friendly and not as bad as, you know, you're right, people will have bad experiences, but I think, but there are different types of businesses, different types of organisations. It's a big old world out there. So don't switch it off because actually it could be a good way of you to basically earn what you should be earning.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, B2B is the one thing that, you know, you've always sat in and you really enjoy it and you're, you know, somebody who's thrived in that area.
Yeah.
I was I'm interested then in, because we're talking about, you know, there's more women coming into the engineering space and the marketing space. How are you using comparison then in helpful ways?
I think in helpful ways, it sometimes it kind of shows me what I'm not. So sometimes you're like, oh, I don't really do that part, especially because, like, you know, a marketing consultant could cover so many different skills under there. So, you know, like sometimes that recognition of, like, you know, when you look at some of, you know, how other people describe themselves and you realize they're like, oh, we're research led or we're this led or we're PR led or events. And you're like, actually, that's not me. And then that kind of, it helps you self-select of what you actually are. So I think things like that, I think as a support network as well, some of it, so, you know, I've got, you know, good friends who obviously are in the same space as me. So that's really useful. But I think sometimes, though, comparison can get into your head a bit. So there are some people who probably some of their stuff I might find a bit triggering, and I just don't switch. But because I go online a lot, then you kind of, I try and switch those ones off because it's like, actually, I don't want to see that. So sometimes
So that's interesting because my research shows that a couple of coping strategies that happen at that point, one of them is avoidance, which is just, you know, unfollow, mute, don't do that. There was a really, you'll like this because there was a really interesting study on, I'm going to forgive them for using the title imposter syndrome because they've actually used the traditional measures of imposter syndrome rather than what I would class as phenomenon. So let's let them off. But a group of researchers at Edinburgh University did a study, and it's like, does LinkedIn cause imposter syndrome? Right?
It might do.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. So what the bit that's really fascinating about where they went with their research is just what happens as a result of that triggering, if you like.
Yeah.
And so what they see is they see some consumption effects. You'll know this as a marketer. So as a marketer, you know that when you send messages out there, it's going to make people either consume a product or do things like, I suppose, detach from a product. It might turn them off. So this isn't a language I'm very kind of well versed in, but apparently when we see other people's feeds on LinkedIn, then it might make us feel inferior. And when we feel inferior, it's more likely to fuel that kind of experience of, I need to go and get trained in that area. So it's very interesting what you've just been saying there, which is, I use that in as a helpful way to go, well, I'm not that and I don't do that and I'm not going to have to worry about that and I don't need to go and suddenly reskill in this area and get that training, etc. But what we're seeing here is that there's evidence that LinkedIn does have that consumption effect on us. So I think just knowing about it and just knowing that that exists, next time you're on your LinkedIn feed and you see something, you might think, oh, is that triggering me to kind of go, I want to avoid this, I want to disassociate from it, or is it making me think, oh god, am I missing a trick, FOMO, I need to go and train? And just noticing that actually happens, because that's an experience we're having.
And I think you're right about, you've, it's just being aware of what's how stuff is making you feel. And I think because of what I do, I am online a lot, probably more, way more than most, so I have to be aware sometimes of, actually, this person, you know, how is this person's material making me feel? Do I want to see this? You know, and especially as well, because, you know, if you start seeing the same stuff, LinkedIn will push more of the similar stuff to you.
Oh, gosh,
So you have to kind of also be mindful that the algorithms are at play as well. Mm. So it's interesting because I'm writing a piece next week for an industry mag that I pitched. And I think one of the points in that piece I'm going to write is, you know, because it's basically around, it's quite interesting in the architecture profession at the moment. There's a lot of kind of expose type stuff around, you know, working practices and sexism, discrimination, you know, there's a lot of this stuff, you know, not treating part ones and part twos well and things. So, but then I was like, is it, I mean, it's kind of like in some ways like a Me Too moment, but not, you know, like for the profession.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of writing a piece around, you know, is the actual profession imploding, or is all of this kind of expose a good thing for the profession and the industry, because other parts of the industry aren't necessarily doing this, but it's still happening there. So it's quite an interesting kind of, and I'm wondering, is that amplified because I'm seeing more of it on my feed and I'm on more than more people, or is it actually a thing?
So here's an interesting comparison then for that. One, I would underline that with, we know that when there is a concerted effort to do things around equality, diversity and inclusion, we see an increase of reporting of things that make people uncomfortable, because people will go, I'm aware this isn't right, I've been empowered to say it's not right, and I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I've got the language to talk about it. I mean, that's the theory, that, and we'd hope that would happen, and we think that happens. But a comparison here is that in the higher education sector where I'm currently working and researching, there have been high profile instances of women of colour who are being treated very unjustly and unfairly.
Yeah.
And my feed for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and we're recording this in January, just for context, has been nothing but. And
I've seen that. Yeah.
I follow a lot of academics. I follow a lot of HE institutions. And to what you've just said there, there was a point last week where I thought, God, this is really strong. One, I did two things. I went and read about what had happened just so I could understand it rather than just seeing it without context. And then two, I have muted one or two of the voices which are louder than others and perpetually reposting the same stuff, because I recognise it's not healthy for my well-being to keep consuming the same message on repeat, but that I do want to hear from those people.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's just, and that's one of the things. I was thinking about it, and I was like, this is really interesting, because is it? And I'm actually going to put that. I will put that in the piece, because it's a really interesting topic. Because I was like, actually, am I seeing more than others because I'm online more, or is it something else? And so that's why. Anyway, so I've got to write that.
And also, you know, I would bring this back to, you know, some of the professional advice marketing people give, like you, which is your content strategy is more than just one message.
Yeah.
And so perhaps if we're hearing the same things, it's because maybe somebody does just post about one thing consistently. Yeah. And we've all unfollowed people who do that. And you think, oh, God, yeah. I mean, you know, I've had enough of that message being run down the
throat. Yeah, yeah.
But I wonder also how much we perceive that, because that's, you know, the popularity of the post put it there more. So we might get we might unfairly appraise people. And I think this disadvantages women more, because if you imagine you've got a woman posting something on LinkedIn and she's angry about it. Now imagine it's a woman of colour posting an angry thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two different reactions to that for a start. We know that racism means that we're more likely to judge the woman of colour disproportionately to the white woman who's angry. And then another thing happens is that, you know, we might only ever really see that amplified
version when she's
of
angry.
Content. Yeah. Rather than the other softer messages that come through. Now, we might be judging and going, oh, that person's always seems to be quite angry.
Because that's the only thing that's amplified to you by the algorithm, right? So it's rather, it's not even that that person's always angry. Yeah. It's literally just like, that's what's going
and
on.
And also, it's interesting. I mean, I'm using the word anger here, because actually when we see pieces by men, we're less likely to use the word angry, but we would use the word angry for women. So, you know, and that's that that's that comparison
so
piece
wrong,
we were talking
it?
About around, you know, social norms. Women are supposed to conform to a social norm to, you know, be demure and not to boast.
Yeah. Hide away.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm just thinking how I'm going to wrap this conversation up, because we have just like, we've meandered all over the place.
Thank you very much.
I think
proud.
That was going to happen. I think we have covered the fact that you are an individual who works in a marketing space, who doesn't necessarily experience, crippling thoughts about imposter phenomenon, but certainly there are aspects of that imposter phenomenon that are prevalent in terms of comparison and noticing, and also around the consumption of some of those kind of messages, which was interesting. If you want to listen to AO's podcast, there's going to be details in the show notes along with how to contact her. She's omnipresent on LinkedIn, so you'll find her there. But do you want to just introduce your podcast a little bit and tell people what platforms it's on and how they can listen and how often?
So my podcast is called The Built Environment Marketing Show. So what it is an episode comes out every 2 weeks, an interview one where I interview someone whose marketing I like from the sector. And then I'll do a solo episode where I'll talk about whatever's on my mind at that moment, really, which can be quite random.
No.
Surprisingly. And you can find it everywhere you listen to podcasts, at Apple, Spotify, all of that kind of stuff. It's there. And yeah, I love my show. It's good fun. I enjoy it.
I love your show. I love you. You've been phenomenal. I knew you would be. Thank you for spending a glorious hour with me to have a laugh. Because,
that was really random, wasn't it? I was just like, I ran into a wall. Yes, I did. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, AO. Bye. Right.
That's it for today. I hope you learned something new. Or perhaps I've given you a new way to think about what you experience. A quick reminder that rating and reviewing all the podcasts you love really does help other people find them, which is especially appreciated by independent podcasters. For more psychological insights, you'll find all the ways you can connect with me in the show notes. Thanks for listening to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. Bye for now.